fund at 6:30 p.m. Okay, Mrs. Barbuda, would you give me a little background about your life in England? Where were you born, your father's occupation, your schooling?
Well, I was born in Bromley-by-Bow. That's the east end of London.
Okay.
And I'm therefore called a Cockney originally.
Okay.
Because I was born within the sound of Bow Bells.
Mm-hmm.
And right alongside the Roman road, the old Roman road,
mm-hmm.
actually. Okay, what else?
Just
what
did
my father do?
Uh-huh.
Well, he was a boxer.
He was.
When he was in the army, he was the champion middleweight, I do believe.
Hmm.
He got the call of black belt
mm-hmm.
for that. He was also the barber of the unit. You want to hear this?
Sure.
Well, he has special honor because the general died of Middlesex Regiment. You can look, I mean to look this up myself.
Okay.
In the archives. And so he was given special honor because he shaved and dressed him for the funeral.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That was time, 1914. And he had special. In fact, the English government doesn't do like the American government does. Give to the soldiers. They give them just a little pay after they're mustered out and stuff. But they were going to establish him in a barber shop because of this honor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think he was also like sort of a hero. He'd
uh-huh.
how he met my mother. He rescued her brother during the war. They were snipers. This is the First World War I'm
okay.
talking about.
Okay.
And yes, and then snipers had to go ahead and reconnoiter, something like that,
uh-huh.
looking ahead, and climb up trees, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. That's how he met my mother and how they got married after the war, because of meeting through her brother. You asked me about him. So therefore, he could have been had a barber shop, but
mm-hmm.
he didn't. Because in those times, you're going to have to cut some of this out, I guess, because it's not about the war.
Oh, no, please continue.
In those times, the barber shops used to be down below. You had to go down steps.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have cellars. Every home doesn't have a cellar in England, but these in around London did. And you know the barber poles
mm-hmm.
that go around? Why do you think they have them?
I have no idea.
Because the barber shops were not above ground. They put them there so that you knew a barbershop was
oh,
down these
okay.
steps. And then lots of people got to lung trouble and things. So my mother didn't want my father to be a barber, so he didn't accept that. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, he was sort of working as with a contractor business, sort of building and fixing roads and things like that. And that's what he did for a living.
Okay.
As far as I can remember.
Do you have any childhood memories that stand out especially?
About what?
Just about growing up.
Oh, I can remember this uncle that I'll mention later. Is it on now?
Uh-huh.
Oh. He used to live in Middlesex. We lived in Essex.
Mm-hmm.
He'd ride his bicycle all around the outskirts of London, urban areas, you call them. And he had this little dog who trotted along beside him. And he had a beautiful baritone voice. And he loved Gilbert and Sullivan operas. And we'd hear him. There weren't lots of cars in those days.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be outside playing usually. And we'd hear him from two blocks away. And the children would be playing. There comes your Uncle George. And true enough, everybody would be quiet. They wanted to hear him. So this same. That's an early memory. I also remember my father used to mend our shoes, cut our hair, cut all the neighbors' hair. And,
how many were in your family?
Five children. Yes, John, Robert, Vera, and yes, Brian. Mm-hmm.
So how old were you when World War II broke out?
I was born 25 and the war broke out in 1938. 35, 10, I was 14.
Okay.
13. That's this uncle I was telling you. Do you want to know when I was first aware of what was going on in Germany?
Uh-huh.
I was about 9 or 10. The same uncle had an argument with my mother. Now, about this time, we were supposed to be migrating, going to Australia. There was a thing going on with in England that if you had certain skills, necessary skills, like the ones I've mentioned with my father, and my mother was sort of handy too, and we were. Anyway, that they paid you away to migrate, go over to Australia. So we were talking about that. So I'm not quite sure if the argument was about what they called the brown shirts, who were the Nazis, the black shirts in Germany,
right,
the brown shirts in London, whether the argument was about that or whether it was about going to Australia, which we didn't, of course, do. That's why I have the memory of this Uncle George. And it was about, they would talk politics, because my mother was, her mother had been a suffragette, and my mother sort of followed along those lines, and therefore was into politics and things, okay? Another interesting thing I used to hear about when I was a child. I always hear about, your father's mother, his mother or the grandmother, was a wonderful woman. I never knew my grandparents, but I just hear these, well, what was so wonderful about her? Well, I never did really find out. Except when I came over to America, I was reading a book, and the name Cannon came up. There was a Mrs. Cannon, who was what they called a wet nurse to, I think it was Edward VII's children. Okay. And I do know that if a person did anything like that, that they were established into business by the royalty, and even if they were Duke and Duchess or whatever, for these certain things when you were done with your service to them. And I do know that the grandmother had a grocery store, which her sons later dissipated, lost everything, But so I still don't know what was so wonderful, and until I came here to America and read that little piece, and I still, that's why I said to you about maybe a book, is it? Which may never happen.
So you think,
because it may not be so, you know.
This may have been your grandmother though.
Yes, and that's why she was so wonderful.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what a wet nurse is?
But you may want to explain it for the tape.
A wet nurse is the royalty didn't feed their own, breastfeed their own children, so they called in women who already had children who were still feeding their children, and they would also nurse those children, and they were called wet nurses. They didn't have to be just royalty; they did it with the rich people. So all of these are just things I heard in my childhood, and
that's very interesting. Now you did mention that brown shirts were in London. So there were Nazis in London.
Well, they were followers of the black shirts, who were the beginnings of the Nazis.
Okay.
Hitlerites, you know, coming up. And, you know, we'd see in the newspaper how strong they were getting, and knew that they were getting strong in the wrong way.
Were you a... So you were 14 now when the war broke out, or approximately that
age. But it began about when I was about 10 years of age. I became aware of what things that were going on in Germany.
At 10 years old, that must have created some fears in your mind if you're hearing this.
Well, not so much fear as wondering, like I still wonder why people, why the good people don't put the bad people down. It seems they're allowed to get so strong before anything is ever done, and it seems to me they should be squashed, more or less, put out of business, when people see that what they're doing is wrong.
Had you heard Hitler on the radio before?
Yeah, I'd say around, around about 12. Oh yes, I heard him ranting and raving. That's really the expression for it.
And that was your impression of him?
Oh, you better believe it. We used to see, we used to go to pictures, it was called then, movies here. Mm-hmm. And we the news was very good. Of course, we're not very far from them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were trying to encourage English people too to do this, you know. Anyway, the news was coverage was very good, and the screens were very big
mm-hmm.
in those days. So we'd see all that was going on. I would say I was very much aware by the time I was 12, 13, and saw what he was doing to the Jewish people then. Some of the first movies we saw was where they were harassing the, which they now call blood, the night of blood or something.
Oh, Kristallnacht, the night of shattered glass.
Yes. And but there was other things previous okay. to that, and saw that they made them scrub the streets, and they were just and rounding them up, and just this is before there was any war or anything.
So you were aware of all this?
Oh yes, oh yes. Mm, and knew they were wrong. Mm-hmm.
So how did the outbreak directly affect your family?
Well, we had just moved to a new house, and I was 13 because I was still going to school. By the way, the first school I went to was in Dagenham, Essex, and it was called Campbell School. And there was a Campbell who was a racing, car racing sportsman.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to visit once and talk with them because the school was named after them.
Uh-huh.
And he also brought along with him this Indian. I can't think of his name right now. who was with Buffalo Bill.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is 1925, about 1932 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was his friend. He met him when he was over here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether it was him or his son, I don't know. Yeah. It may come to me later what his name is. But he did, he brought this. He was the Indian who was Indian chief who was with Buffalo Bill's group, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or there's also another question here. Buffalo Bill, I found out when he was out west, his son also did. So maybe it's the sons of both the Indian chief and mm-hmm. Buffalo Bill's son. I'm not sure about date, you see. So the time would have been 1932, okay. Around about that.
So you saw this Indian?
Yes.
Okay.
So how do we get on to that? So by this time I was going to another school, and we graduated at the age of 14. But if you won a scholarship, you went on to a higher school, but you had to pay a certain amount. So I won this scholarship, but wasn't able to go because my parents couldn't afford to pay all the extra money mm-hmm. for clothes, etc., etc. And anyway, the war began.
Mm-hmm.
14. So in any event, my brother got called up, my eldest brother. It was 1938. So he had to go. Previous to that, I'm not going to make names here, but it was Chamberlain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people called him a coward, etc., etc. But at that time, it was a dreadful fear
mm-hmm.
because Hitler had become very powerful, and we saw what he was doing and all of that, and the power he was building up, his military might. And I thought at the time that the British were basically wanting peace,
mm-hmm.
which they were. They weren't prepared in the first place. They were devastated from the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Germany was also, but Germany. The one thing Hitler was doing, he was getting funnily enough, not really funny, but it seems like when things are peaceful, the economy sometimes goes down.
Uh-huh.
But somewhere or another, somehow or another, if you build up military might, you're able to get the country going again somehow or another, whether it's because they're making uniforms, making the military weapons, getting the people to be doing something, even if you're joining the army,
uh-huh.
it's getting them something. So anyway, they were becoming strong. And 1937, I think it would be, is when Chamberlain called the appeaser.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, we were not ready. And the people on the street and the people I knew were glad and happy because of this dreadful, there's no other feeling like this dreadful fear you have that somebody's going to come and take you from your home and do all kinds of dreadful things. After seeing all the movies that they've seen what they've been doing to the Jews, you know.
Oh, yes, I imagine.
And so, anyway, my brother got, he was called up and he was in the Royal Artillery. And my father was away also at the time. He used to work wherever he was needed with construction and building and mending and making roads and things like that. I'm not exactly, he used to drive what they call a compressor driver, which would pump something out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was needed wherever they did these things. And they were at the time, even though we wanted, they were starting to make different airports and things.
Mm-hmm.
I now know that. I didn't know at the time. Mm-hmm. Things were very secretive, you know, you didn't, I'll tell you after about secret.
Okay.
And so my father was away, and then my brother went. And of course, that was the beginning. That was 1938, after Chamberlain had gained peace for us, gave us time,
mm-hmm.
even to call people up, go to basic training, you know, things like that. So whatever they say about him, I know as a child it was a wonderful relief. No, we're not going to war. And what was the thinking? Oh, they're going to do something to stop Hitler. He's going to realize that what he's doing is not right, etc., etc. Things like that, you know. Of course, that didn't happen. And because then he took over France, wasn't it? No, Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Czechoslovakia.
And then was taking more and more and more. And we knew that he wouldn't stop. Even then, he had to be controlled. Because he wouldn't stop. He wanted England.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted the world. I mean, you just had to hear. Yes, you'd hear him on the radio. So that was the beginning. You asked me about the beginning of the 1930s.
Your parents apparently talked a lot about this. I'm really interested in the fact that you were aware as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old of the harassment of the Jews then.
Well, they used to read the newspaper a lot.
Uh-huh.
News of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And they would discuss it. And I would talk and listen. And we listened to the radio. There was no television.
Uh-huh.
But we listened to the radio. And then listened to the news. And especially after 37 with Chamberlain. I mean, we were on edge after that, even though it was peace. So therefore, we were watching the news carefully to see. And you know, just across the English Channel. Mm-hmm. It was only a few miles.
Well, then, what do you remember about Dunkirk, the Battle of Dunkirk?
Okay. I lived in Dagenham on a street called the Heathway.
Mm-hmm.
And it went as far as, I suppose, going maybe 2 miles, a mile and a half long. It was a very wide street.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a busy thoroughfare with cars and buses, double-decker buses. Okay, my bedroom looked out on the front street. My bedroom would be looking out the street here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little garden from here to here. Then it was a sidewalk. So I suppose this was my window of my bedroom. Over there would start the street,
uh-huh.
which is a big, pretty wide highway street. Not as wide as they are here, but it was decent size. And I can't remember the exact month, but it was before Dunkirk, quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 to 3 weeks, soldiers and tanks and guns and artillery, and they were going by in the trucks,
mm-hmm.
filled with soldiers, morning, noon, and night. It never stopped. And most of those got killed. That's later. Well, where were they going? They were going to, there was a Ford's factory, okay, made
mm-hmm.
cars,
uh-huh.
but converted then to war, you know, war machine things. But they had a dock. It was on the, we lived by the River Thames. from London, following London through the East End and going down to Dagenham, Essex. And it goes around like this. Here's London. He twirls around like this and goes around. And you get here, and there's the North Sea. And here's Dagenham here.
Okay.
Along the River Thames. From my bedroom also, I could look a mile. There was there'd been a farm beyond there, and it was just, there was a highway in between called Ripple Road, come to think of it, as I looked out my bedroom window. But beyond that was the River Thames. Not as close as I can see the river here.
Okay.
That's part of the reason we moved here.
Okay.
Except what's happening now is another story. Right outside here. Oh. Okay. What am I talking about? Oh, you asked me. Morning, noon, and night. Soldiers. Never stop.
Okay, now that's before Dunkirk.
Mm.
And then you hear about...
Well, we never saw them coming back.
Okay.
So I don't know what way they came back, but the stuff all got lost, left over there.
Mm-hmm.
They just rescued the soldiers.
Do you remember that rescue?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was dreadful, too.
Tell me about that.
Well, of course, like I said, I had watched them for 3 weeks. And then to realize that all these men were being killed and taken prisoner. And we saw the movies, the news, where the boats, just any kind of little boat was being taken over there to rescue, even if you rescued one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, big boats were taken over there too to get them out. But yes, it was a dreadful loss. They had this, going to hang out the washing on the Siegfried Line bits. And the French had the Maginot Line, which mm-hmm. nobody could penetrate. Dream. So when, you know, you listen to all that and you think, oh, he'll never get past them, and with our soldiers going, he'll never get past them. And he did. Well, picture that. He's only got 20 more miles to come across, and there, we've had it. Didn't know till after the war. He wanted to save London, all those buildings. That's why he didn't bomb them.
He wanted to save the
yes,
buildings.
Yes, he wanted them. Mm-hmm. He really admired. He wanted to own all the things.
Which
are intact, in other words.
Okay.
Plus, they were also, the pilots used them when they were bombing, like St. Paul's Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
That was a, what they call a site that they could look for. And they bombed. Actually, we used to, the English, I'll tell you this. The only good thing, they said, what's a good thing you did that? The East End was really becoming slums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, I mean, the English always come up with a joke, a little bit lighthearted, even in the middle of dreadful things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sense of humor. They said, well, I did us a favor. It's the only good thing Hitler did was to bomb the East End and get rid of all that. Because they, no, actually, they were talking about really doing everything there to improve it before the war. That was to be a project then.
Well, that was your brother in the army during this, the Battle of Dunkirk?
Yes, but he didn't go over there. He was, he'd already been sent to Africa and places like that.
Okay.
The Middle East.
Okay.
It was in, I remember names and places right now, but he was with Montgomery.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. El Alamein comes to my mind. But that was later, but that's where he was going. And no, he didn't go to Dunkirk. I had another brother that was called up later. My eldest brother, George, not the Uncle George, Brother George.
Mm-hmm.
He is the first one to be called up. He's 7 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very close as a family.
He was the one in Africa?
He's the one that went to Africa.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And did I say El Alamein?
Mm-hmm.
And my other brother got called up later. He's only 2 years older than I am. So you see, he had to wait till he was like 18, 17, 18. And he got called up then. So my brother would have been 5 years older than the eldest brother, than the younger brother. So he would have been 18 when he went. So it would be another 4 or 5 years before my other brother went, got called up. And he was in the engineers. He ended up going over to France after. But that's when things were getting a little better. We were winning then when he went over to France as an engineer, building bridges and things. So he would have been in the groups that were rebuilding.
After the Battle of Dunkirk, England began to prepare for a possible invasion.
Yes, I was going to tell you that.
Go ahead.
I mentioned something about not talking, didn't I? And this...
No, I don't think you did.
About how he didn't say things. Previous, early parts of the war, even before the war, we became secretive.
Okay.
We weren't allowed to tell anybody anything because Germany was so close, lots of spies were around. If you said one thing, it would get back. So the English became very secretive. You didn't tell anybody anything. They took down all road signs, what the names of the streets were. They took down all directions. That's why the Americans all got lost. I never thought about it. There weren't that many cars that we had. I didn't know, I have some friends with cars, and that was unusual, you know, but we just got on buses. We knew it was going to, they put the sign up for a little while, this bus goes to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then they'd cover the sign up, roll it around, so that people wouldn't know the destination. This was just for spies, so they wouldn't know where they were. You didn't know the names of villages or anything. So, I laugh about it now, but you were asking me from this, how did we come up about this? Oh, about what how it was in preparing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And of course they were making airports and for the airmen, and you never said anything about there being an airport near you.
Mm-hmm.
Even the name of it. In fact, I worked at one called Struby. You didn't mention that you went out there to work, for instance, because then they'd know they were preparing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there were, I won't name the people, but well, there was some sabotage that they came over to work for us because they weren't being called up. Certain, we won't mention which, you know, country or people it was or anything, but they sabotaged as they were helping us to build pipelines and things. Because the Englishmen were being called up in the army, okay? Mm-hmm. Only the very young were left, and the very old. They were the, even the old men were called up, you know, too. Mm-hmm. They were called, I can't think what they were, but the home front, and they were calling and preparing to protect the people because all the younger men were being called away. They were all. If you were physically fit, you went. They wanted to go also. It wasn't like now.
Uh-huh.
Some of the wars we've had were wrong, okay, since then.
Okay.
But at that time, when you're expecting invasion, then the first thing you want to do is protect your own,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. In fact, there was a time. Oh, we prepared in another way. We had dugouts.
Okay.
We lived in the urban area. So the government issued to everybody these steel things that you had to dig 6 feet or more under the ground, make steps to go down, and the entrance was about here to here.
About halfway up from the door.
From here, and that much again, just enough to get in.
Okay.
And you had a little ladder making steps down, and you made your own couple of benches on the inside. And they were like corrugated steel is what I'm trying to think of they were.
Mm-hmm.
So you put that framework there and then you covered it all over with dirt so that when there were air raids that they caught a lot of flak. Even if you got a direct hit, they said you didn't hear it. You heard the rest going and well, and the ground shook, though that was close. But they say if you ever got hit, which you never was, you wouldn't hear it for some reason. But this was protection against all that flak, and which was the bombs that would fly and scatter, and even if you didn't get direct hits, you could get injured that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you went down into your dugout whenever the air raid warning, which was another dreadful sound.
Okay.
And air raid warnings. The closest thing I could hear to them is now when they have these warnings that sound here sometimes for is it air pollution or something, or in case there's a...
The tornado warnings? Okay.
But it's the worst, dreadful.
What feeling does that?
I can't explain to you. It's a feeling I wouldn't want my own children or anybody else to have. You know, it's a feeling that you just go cold and your heart sinks. There's no happiness within you. It's just a dread. And there was one time that we all decided that if the Germans did come over and invade, that we were going to get some pills that we would take rather than surrender or be taken prisoner by the Germans. And we actually decided to do that as
you
a family.
You know, cyanide pills.
Well, my mother never actually said what they were, just some pills that would make us go to sleep.
Okay.
And it'd be the last sleep. Yeah, we did discuss that and decide to do that, but of course it never happened. That was in the event that this did come to pass. So now this wasn't, you know, the war for us was 8 years. My brother was in the army 8 years before he came back. So from 1938 to, what was it, 45? It'll be 7 years, wouldn't it?
Okay, yes.
7 years. But when I say eight, it began. Okay. Because then my brother got caught in between that, 87 and 80. 88. What did I say?
No,
37 and 38. So, what am I talking about? This will go on with me.
Okay, we're talking about preparing for
the
invasion.
The, what did I call it? The underground shelter.
And you talked about the underground shelters. Every home had one? Or
in the urban areas that we lived. In London, they went to the underground railways.
Oh, all right.
Some of them didn't have gardens in East End of London, middle of London. So they used to go to the underground. But I lived on, at that time, it was an urban area. And we all had our gardens. Mm-hmm. And so they also issued us with gas masks.
Oh, really?
You know, this last thing they had, Iraq, right? You saw the people with their gas masks and everything, but they're horrible things. And so much so that I said, I would rather die than be wearing this thing. It used to gag me just to put the thing on. You know, this is thick rubber and an odor. And unless they've improved on the rubber, maybe they have now, I don't know. But the odor then of rubber, you know, not very pleasant rubber. They were awful. But to still, you carried them in this little box everywhere you went.
Everywhere you went,
in case. The only thing that would have made me put one on was because I would think to survive in order to get back to the family. I had a younger brother that I was crazy about. One time, I come home, I must have been working at the time, I went to work when I was 14, and I said, where's Brian? Well, I was never allowed to really go anywhere. My mother used to work at the same time too, but her little girlfriend, who was like about 3 years old, three and a half, going on four maybe, not quite sure. And she lived five doors up from us. The houses were rows of houses, four in a row and then a break. She would end up there to play with so-and-so. So I go up to see right away, to bring him home, in fact. And they said, I just went around the corner to the sweet shop. That's the candy store. And it was like around the block from around here. Two houses then down the street. And I see them walking along together. Then here came, I know now why I was so scared. There was an air raid morning, okay? While they were out. This is the middle of the day. And they would come down strafing. And they were actually, this one, I don't know why they did that. Sometimes if there was a shopping place where they saw people, they would come down and strafe them if they were particularly angry or something or other. So this one was doing that, and here's my brother and his little girlfriend walking on the street. So yes. I get to them, and we had like porches, rounded porches, like this, oval. And there were two doorways. One was ours, one was the neighbor's. Mm-hmm. And there were many of those. Well, the closest one, I just happened to get to them and pulled them into this, like about from here to there to get to this porch of this house, and pulled them into there because he was coming down and strafing.
A three-year-old?
Yeah, well, he wasn't strafing them in particular. Just there was other people along the streets. Oh. There was a shopping street going down this way. They were coming up this way, just rattling through them like candy. Yeah, and I just dragged them and, gosh, you just reminded me of that.
Ooh. That was pretty scary, geez.
Yeah.
What about blackouts then here?
Oh. Hmm. Yes, you couldn't show a chink of light. Air raid wardens, that's what the elderly men did. They became air raid wardens.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go around checking if there was a chink of light. There was no light shown. Nobody ever did. You were fined if you did, you know. But you didn't want to.
Uh-huh.
Because a little chink of light, when you did go out anywhere, a little chink of light from somebody's house would shine, for you wouldn't believe how far. Especially when there's no other lights.
Uh-huh.
And if you were up above on a plane,
mm-hmm.
if somebody did have light, didn't have their blinds drawn, and we had blankets issue. Well, we just got them, and every window was covered up with these blankets
mm-hmm.
and black material that had been made from off-road to put up there. And that's why it's called blackout. You put the black mm-hmm. material up your windows. They could see if anybody didn't put their, of course, everybody would be after them. But if in the event one left their window open and a light on,
uh-huh.
an aeroplane up there could see that and drop their bombs. Very true,
uh-huh.
very true. But as a lighter side of it, told you I lived near Ford Motor Works.
Uh-huh.
Well, there was a time there where he was dropping Molotov baskets, they were called. Molotov baskets, but they came down in a basket sort
uh-huh.
of thing, and then they would explode and scatter.
Uh-huh.
That's where you get the flak.
Okay.
So I have been known to walk through. I would go to the show because when things, they weren't always bombing. There was like a year or so before, or 9 months or 6 months, and nothing would be happening. And then there'd be uh-huh. some bombing and stuff like that. Then when it got to be a little lighter, shall we say, or you got used to it.
Uh-huh.
So you thought you could go to the show. But coming out stayed too long and it was dark. Well, now that was tough. Because you couldn't see. I would just remember the way certain railings and hedges were. I suppose I must have been able to see it. If it was a starry night, a moonlight night, of course.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful.
Oh, I bet.
See, there were times that were beautiful. No lights.
Uh-huh.
But you could see the beautiful stars and the gorgeous moon if you were. Especially when. This is when I was very young. Later on, I'll tell you in a minute. We moved up to the East Coast. And I was really able to appreciate the beautiful North Sea and the moonlight mm-hmm. nights. So there was a time when I was going to a show, a couple of times it happened, and I'm walking home amidst flak, and it keeps going, bing, 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 bing. But I was very brave by that time.
You must have been. My goodness, I've been scared of that, I think.
But you had to get home, you know, because the family, where were, you know, nobody went out much late at night. I guess by that time, I'm getting braver.
What did your family do?
Well, they were just glad I got home, yeah. Yeah. What was the question?
Well, we were talking about, and you've answered it very well, preparing for an invasion. And is there anything else you want to tell me about preparing? We've talked about the air raids.
Well, yes, they had the, around London they had the balloon things, which I can't think of what they were called, so that when the planes came down, they would apparently get entangled with them, or they weren't able to zoom down so much. And it was more, I think it was a moral thing really, to hold up your morale, and because these balloons were all around, sort of protection
mm-hmm.
from the coming down and strafing us. You know.
Did they work very well?
I expect they must have worked to a certain extent, but as I said, I think they were really more for people's morale. They had them out on the River Thames, all around London. I have this other thing on my younger brother. He used to work in the East End of London from Dagenham, where we lived. And he used to ride his bicycle. They're great on riding bicycles, back and forth to work. And he used to follow the railroad track from London out to Dagenham, back and forth. Well, there was a time, it's when he decided to join up, I think. Don't think he was called up. Because every day he'd go to work and he'd see, he'd sell us, one side of the track was all bombed. There's the railroad track. We couldn't understand how they never bombed the track, the railroad track. The other side was bombed. It went along all the way down the track into London. They bombed from side to side. The surrounding areas, of course. This is when they bombed all the East End, too.
Why didn't, do you know now why they didn't bomb the railroad track?
No, I haven't thought about it till right now. Probably because they wanted to use them themselves if they came over with ship. Yeah, I just thought of that, you see. All I had in my mind was my brother becoming sick and how my mother used to tell him, drink a, swallow a raw egg. Crazy. I think she just told him that just to, it'll give you strength. Well, I suppose it will. It's stamina of riding a bicycle, whatever. I was just thinking about it the other day. What are you talking about? Take a raw egg. That's going to probably spit it out when it's upset stomach and see you know what's happening.
I would think so.
But I just remember him saying, and really we just took everything with a pinch of salt. Oh, yes, you know. Got to the point of, well, oh, yeah, bomb this side, bomb that side. And sort of accepting it. I mean, there's nothing we could do to stop it. You just keep on going. There were good times. Even so, you know, later on, kept on living, going to work, had good dances later on.
Oh, did you really?
Well, yeah, people like to dance in England. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to have a way of brightening up your life a little. Yeah, so, it still has socials. As you know, as the time of the bombing of London was over and quietened down, you could. And even during, like I said, I went to the movies.
Well, you had, the government had to expect that London would be bombed. Again, going back a little bit to after the Battle of Dunkirk, because I remember Churchill's speech about preparing.
Oh, yeah, well, that goes on with the air raid shelters and preparing. People, for instance, the farmers, they were all in groups, so if airmen came down, there was a story, which is quite true, how these farmers nearly killed an English airman. It was not too far, it was around our area, you know, because they thought it was German, they got carried away. But apart from that, yes, they were all, the Home Guard is what they were called, were all preparing to do their part, that is to say, to become soldiers. They were soldiers anyway. None of us would really, I mentioned that bit about we had talked about taking pills, but apart from that, we were all very strong in the fact that we would protect England and our families. Mm-hmm. All very strong on that.
What about the children around that area that you knew was going to be bombed? Were children moved out?
Yes, we evacuated.
At what age?
This was between, this is before Dunkirk.
Oh, before?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I evacuated once. Oh, in fact, They announced it on the radio. And this Ford company, they provided us with their boats. And so, the day came when it was announced on the radio that all children were to be gathered at certain spots. We were told at school where, previous to that. And then we would walk down to the docks and we would get onto the boats and we would be evacuated. Okay. I must have been about 13 and a half, something like that then. And my sister and I were to go, and my sister's 2 years younger than I. I had a younger brother. There were three brothers.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Brian. He must have been 9 years old. I was 9 years older than him when he was born. Eight or so. So he would have been about 1 and a half, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 when he was born, I think he started 10. I don't know, the ages are getting mixed up, but he was about 2, no more than 2, I don't think, at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember saying to my mother, well, I'm not going without Brian. And my mother used to send her laundry out, because she used to work in the mornings. And that, it was a laundry bag, you know, like duffel bags that soldiers had, only white.
Uh-huh.
You know, she crammed such an incredible amount of laundry in that bag. I says, I'll cut a couple of holes for Brian to breathe, and I'll carry that him on my back, and they'll think it's just our clothes. And I was going to take my brother with me. There was no way I was going to leave my brother to get killed along with my mother. I couldn't make my mother go, but she, of course, she would have let me take him.
Uh-huh.
Out she of the bombing range. She, okay. Yes, well, I was saying I would do that. And then during the night, about 4 o'clock, of course, we listened continually. Came on the radio that all mothers with preschool children could go and would be going and taking the children with them. So therefore, I didn't have to put them in a laundry bag. So in the middle of the night, we didn't know where my father was. He was, as I said, stationed away somewhere on the work he did. He didn't know we were going because you didn't hear all the radio stations within a certain area, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the other side of London at the time. So we all had to get up early in the morning, 4 o'clock, and left and went to the boat dock, Ford Motor Works boat dock by the River Thames.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we were there, we were separated, but I, of course, stuck with my sister. She was with me, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay, you were in the process of being evacuated.
Oh, we went down to the boat dock, and then they were separated, the mothers with preschool children, mm-hmm. to go to another area.
Mm.
We were put on the same boat, though. I remember getting dreadfully seasick, even though I used to like to swim. But when we got to our destination, now I know where we went, like I know the back of my hand, but I can't think of it right now. There's a pottery place on the East Coast. It'll come to me and I'll tell you later maybe. Anyway, when we got to our destination, we were separated. Mothers and children went one place and we went another. And actually, I ended up in Leiston, Suffolk, which happens to be what's this school that we have that we're allowed to do everything that begins with an M, allowed to do anything they want? They have some around here. Put that on while we think. Call something. M something.
Magnet school?
No.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a permissive type of school. Let them, okay. And it's in Summerhill, which I now have got the book on it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But at that time, well, I'm going ahead of myself. That's why I ended up in Leiston with my sister.
Okay.
And I didn't know where my mother was. I still don't know where she'd been, come to think of it. I can't remember. But she didn't know where we were. Nobody knew where anybody was. My eldest brother was in the army. The other one just joined up.
Mm-hmm.
Second young eldest. My mother had been separated, but she had my younger brother with her, but we didn't know where we were. My father didn't know where we were because he was stationed working somewhere. As I said, nobody knew. It took about 2 months before they found out, through letters being finally getting together,
mm-hmm.
that my father went and got my mother and brought her home from wherever she was, and then came and got us from Leicester and took us home. Because by that time it wasn't as bad as they thought it would be. It seems that Hitler or the German was supposed to be going to be bombing our area
mm-hmm.
a great deal because of the motor works
mm-hmm.
and other things probably around there. There was an airport that took not too far from there. And so that's why the evacuation, but then gradually we all came back. But that was another, I know what it's like to evacuate. And it's if you want me to describe it, it doesn't matter what you have. You just get up and you go, because it's a matter of survival.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't matter, my mother has some beautiful oil paintings which disappear, we never did find them. But all of this stuff, if you have the most beautiful house, which we don't have, but if you did, you just leave it. You know, you need to see where people evacuate now and go up, just uh-huh. go. Well, when it's a matter of survival and it's a matter of protecting for myself, my younger sister, my younger mm-hmm. brother, and my mother, you go. You just feel like you're protecting them. So you're not fearful about that, and you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's no second thought about, well, we just, it's not a very good feeling, mind you, but you do it. You don't say, oh, I'm going to stay here and protect this stuff. Who cares? You know? It's like, so even to this day, I can get up and go mm-hmm. and leave at any time.
Mm-hmm.
After I've been through that, it wouldn't matter to me even now. And back to being secretive.
Okay.
You never told anybody anything. Because the spy could be asking you something and given a direction. You never did that. You never gave directions. So that when I came over here, and I'm still do not trust people. Because from the age of 10,
I guess not.
You don't trust people.
Uh-huh.
And what was the first letter I got from America? I had an uncle over here that I didn't get to see. He writes and he tells me, they're very strange people in America, Hilda. I have the letter somewhere. Don't trust anybody. So, well, that's a good start. Since I never did, right? But to this day, to this day, I don't. Not that I'm distrustful of people, but I'm leery of them.
Uh-huh.
And that's because of that.
So I'm assuming now that you were not in London during that blitz.
No.
Then you were out.
Oh. What happened there? We came back from evacuation, and there was a peaceful sort of time. Nothing was happening. My brother, I think I'm getting my times confused here. My brother hadn't gone to Africa immediately, but he was in some sort of basic training area.
Mm-hmm.
A year later, which was in Mablethorpe in Lincolnshire. It was on the east coast
mm-hmm.
by the North Sea. Now this was a seaside resort, but a very small, sleepy village.
Mm-hmm.
But people had cottages. Now the army confiscated all these cottages, most of them anyway. But some people, if they were able to rent them out, didn't get them confiscated. Because
mm-hmm.
some people, they were allowed at that time for some wives to go live within the area. Oh, by the way, if you were in a certain area, Mablethorpe, on the coast, okay, you weren't allowed to go beyond a certain area without permission. Certain villages.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you had to go beyond that, you had to get work permit to say that's where you were going, especially from the coast. Especially because all these basic training places were all along the coast.
Okay.
And airports.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Plus, I watched all the, well, my brother was stationed there, basic training.
Uh-huh.
And he got a rented a place for my mother. So she went there with my younger sister. My younger sister had evacuated twice because I was through school, but they evacuated again. There was another
mm-hmm.
scare. There were different scares, okay, so
mm-hmm.
she got that. And I went and got her this one time. She was in Oh, she's in the middle of England somewhere. I should have been able to write these things down before you came, but...
Oh, that's all right.
Anyway, so all I remember is the accent they had, which is different from ours. But she came back, I brought her back from that place, she was evacuated too. And then she went with my mother, evacuating again, but privately. You could evacuate privately if you got permission, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So she went there, but I stayed in London for a while because I was working. But then after a while, I joined my mother because my other brother, by that time, had gone into the army. My father was working away, and I was the only one left in the house. So I went to my mother.
Your mother was living...
in Mablethorpe, Lincolnshire.
In Mablethorpe, okay.
Mm-hmm. So the rest of my time in England was spent there, excepting that I got called up to do munitions work when I was 18.
Okay. You were called up?
Called up.
As if?
Yeah, like you'd went into the army.
Okay.
Or the navy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could go on to munitions work. But... They sort of took a survey of you, you know, what you could do, what you couldn't do. So I was called up to go to, at that time, they were needing things for AK-AK guns, brain guns, because of the starting to attack them more by then. And we'll figure out what year it is by knowing that I was 17 at the time. I volunteered, that was it.
Okay.
I didn't, you could take your choice. You either got waited till you were 18 and got called up, put in the land army or the army, as they chose. But if you volunteered, you had a choice. Well, I volunteered because I could go into munitions in more in the centre of London, Grantham it was, from Lincolnshire. Mablethorpe here, it was inland. There's England, okay. And, and I was inland, Grantham, was still Lincolnshire.
Okay.
And so that's how I got into munitions work, because that way I would be able to go home and see my mother. I was very protective. I was the eldest girl, you know, and I was always helped my mother and been there. I guess I was more aware of what was going on and therefore protected, protective, even if my brother was 2 years older than me, I was very protective of him.
Well, now what was it like working in this munitions plant?
Well, I didn't earn much money because I was only 17. And I became a machinist. And I was working on this machine that would smooth out the inside of 20 millimeter brain guns. And it was a big machine. And we used to work morning, noon and night. We had one day off, and it was more like 12 hours, but we used to work like 10 hours, because we'd start work at 8 and be done at 8 at night, or get home at that time. So it was sort of it was from 8 to 8 from leaving the house. I used to live in what they called a hostel, with like army barracks, but they weren't army barracks, they were more civilian barracks. They had a fence around them and a guard there simply to protect the girls. They were all women. You know? And so we'd get on a bus and go to the factory and work, and then we're brought back from the factory to the hostel where we stayed. You could live in private houses, which I did in the first instance when I was just first went out there, but the people were sort of too protective and controlling of me, and I'd been a person from the time of 13. 14 I went to work that was very independent and had to be strong for the family, therefore I didn't want, even though I know now they were really trying to protect me, it seemed like, I mean, I had no freedom working, going there, and then the people running my life for me even there. It was, so anyway, I went to the hostel, and that's how it was. We had one day, well then I must have had weekends off too later on, because I was able to go home by bus and come back one day and come back the next day. So I must have got 2 days off. Anyway, sometimes it was like there was no time off. When you had 2 weeks of days and 2 weeks of nights shifted.
Did you have to worry about sabotage? Or?
Oh, yes, you never said where you were. I'll tell you about the other place after. So anyway, I was making the gun barrels that I didn't get full pay until I was 18. And right, they needed these gun barrels. There was lots of dog fights at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And losing lots of men and planes. So they really needed them, so I kept working and to get as many out as you could. So the gun barrel was not cooled down and I had to go outside the factory. And they were stood up on racks. I had got steps. It wasn't because I wanted the money, because I was only getting 2/3 of what the other people got,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much I did, what I did. But because it was needed.
Uh-huh.
And I went and got this barrel that was cooling off before I could put it onto the machine I was going to use. And it fell, and I dropped it because I went up steps. And, oh no, one rolled down. I got the one I was going to take. So it weighed 50 pounds, 100 pounds, I think. But on my shoulder, I was strong. And the one fell down off the rack and hit my toe. So I wasn't able. That was just when I was becoming 18.
Uh huh.
When I would have gotten full pay.
Oh, okay.
So I was off work for a while. And we were in what we call a shadow factory. And I still don't know where it was.
Hmm.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Because it was a shadow factory. All amongst the trees. I used to take my lunch out on the grounds with daffodils and trees. It was lovely. But that was that work. And then we were winning the war slightly. We weren't needing so many, there weren't so many gunfights. We were apparently winning the war in the air. But they needed, it was the time of Leningrad.
Okay.
Okay, uh-huh. So that was towards the rundown of the war, wasn't it? Maybe must be about 45, 44, something
okay,
like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so they said, I used to get full of oil. We used to wear these overalls and they're just full of oil. So they said, if you come to work for us, you'll be able to eat off the floor. That's how clean it is.
Hmm.
So I thought that was marvelous. So I go there. And what it was the cordite, making cordite.
And what was that for?
That was for the rockets.
Okay.
And I rolled cordite to make rockets. To save the city of Leningrad. Okay, not all my effort, but that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked there, I had a special badge to wear or to show that I could get on, if there was a line, which there always was, line of buses,
mm-hmm.
and I had gone home and had to get on a bus, I went to the front of the line because I was what was called a frontline worker.
Oh, okay.
Because let me tell you about this. Where you are, suppose there's a door like this, you'd be sitting there, and inside here is this big machine, and a roll cordite on it, big wheel, steel,
uh-huh.
and it came in the form of, sort of like a, I don't know, beaver board type stuff that could crinkle up
uh-huh.
and break. You got boards of it, and you broke it up. And you threw it up through this roll. When it came down out, it was sort of a yellowy, pale yellow beige colour, but kind of whitish looking too. We fold it this way, and this way. One, two, three.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because you had let the air out. If you fold it over, it would explode. Because no way could the air get out and form bubbles and explode.
Oh my.
So while you were sitting there, would you had your hand on a chain, and if you heard anything, you pulled that chain and water would come down. and these factories were underneath the ground, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that could be seen was if a chain was pulled, up would come the flaps to let the fire out, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the water would come down. He said, that's why you were sitting there. You were my partner. And I was here. Other than that, there was electric eyes. if they store a spark, same thing would happen. Okay, so that's one of the partners.
Okay.
And it was called cordite. And when the finished product was there, it was like a golden color like this would be, and clear.
Uh-huh.
Like that. And that was finished product, cordite, that was simply rolled up and shoved into... Did you ever see them on TV or any? There's one, two, three of them, and they'd make that noise. Uh-huh. There'd be a flame going up.
Oh, okay.
One, two, three.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you ever see pictures of Leningrad and stuff, that's what... That actually is what saved the city. Well, okay. Yeah. Shall we have a drink of pop or something?
Okay, let's stop here just a minute. Do you remember hearing Lord Ho-Ho on the radio?
Ho-Ho.
Lord Ho-Ho?
Lord Ho-Ho. H-A-W?
No, Ho-Ho.
No, I remember Lord Ho-Ho. Anything on it.
Back up. Once again, tell me about the traitor.
Lord Ho-Ho.
Right.
There may have been a little humor in that. H-A-W. What I remember is, he was what they called a traitor, and he'd gone over to Hitler and gone over to Germany, and he reached a broadcast, and he was trying to persuade certain elements that Hitler was right. And at that time, the things were very bad, and he was going to take over England anyway, and that you should comply, you know. And he was coming over to sort of try to make arrangements and converse with various people. And he did come over in an airplane and parachuted down, but they captured him. Because the only way he could get in, they weren't going to say, yes, you come over and we'll talk. So... there you are. What are they called? Barrage balloons that surrounded the city of London.
Zeppelins.
Yeah.
Barrage balloons. So we call them.
Mixing up here. You should maybe you borrow this.
Okay.
There's that ones on England, the whole countryside.
Well,
that's a modern one, but I don't know whether you want to see that.
She just wants World War II. See if she likes, but that's.
I thought I had another one, but I don't.
Where were we on this? Oh, and that he's broadcasting, making out he's like the good guy, you know, paving the way for Hitler is what he was supposed to be doing. And we'd read all about that in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't recall, actually, they may have played something just to hear some of the stuff he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I remember about him, that he was a traitor and that they got him and they were going to have him up for trial and things. As a traitor. In fact, he was, wasn't he? Convicted. Yes.
Was he executed or just went to prison?
I can't remember that. I think he was imprisoned.
Okay. I also wanted to know, again, what was your reaction, the English reaction, your reaction to Americans coming to England?
Well, I mean... They were our heroes. They were saving us because we were in dire need at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We'd lost a lot of men, and we needed America to be on our side. They were seemed like they were our only friends we had left by then. All the other countries in Europe had been taken over by Germany,
mm-hmm.
and so we needed America and couldn't understand at the time why they were holding off so long. Mm-hmm. Really couldn't, because we knew. That Hitler wanted America too. He wanted the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't understand why, for the longest time, he didn't join in.
Mm-hmm.
And help the English, because I guess we kind of thought that it was mainly English people in America, we thought, because there were many more others, but there was an affiliation, as well as Canada, you know, being so close in proximity. Couldn't understand that, but when they did finally come, yes, everything was going to be fine. They were going to help us. This is the help that we needed, and everything was going to be fine. Our hearts were lifted.
And
that was the beginning of starting to feel better about things, and not having that dread with us all the time.
And this was the time that you met your husband.
Yes. What year was it? 40? Let me think. He was married in 47, 2 years before 45 he left, and you were there 2 years, weren't you? Must have been 1943 you came over to England, Paul? 1943?
Yeah,
43. In between 43 and 44? Mm-hmm. You were over there 2 years, weren't you? You were there 2 years, and then gone 2 years.
Okay, well tell me how you met him.
Well, I told you about how I had the gun barrel on my fall on my foot, right. And I had it in a cast. But they needed they were needing ammunition and stuff because of what was going on in Africa. And so I volunteered to go back and work on the assembly line in the town. The factory was not a shadow factory. It was in the town. And it belonged to Kendall. Remember Kendall?
Mm-hmm.
And even though I still had the cast on, I was able to sit at the bench and gauge mm-hmm. bullets. Got a confession about all that since. And while I was there, by the way, Margaret Thatcher, I'm not quite sure about this, but I believe she worked in an office.
Oh, really?
And I believe I knew her.
Uh-huh. Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, and why I always say I liked is, you know, in England, office workers were sort of uppity,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't converse and become very friendly with the general workers.
Mm-hmm.
But she used to come through, and she was a gorgeous blonde, and I used to admire her and look at her, and she used to speak and talk with me.
Oh.
It didn't matter to me what position you were,
uh-huh.
but the others were a little bit in awe. Oh, she's talking to her, you know. She's an office worker. This is how things were, you know,
uh-huh.
in England. Like, for instance, Paul was friendly with his captain. In the British Army, he would be friendly with him, but not close like his captain was with him. He wanted uh-huh. to be a football player, which he did do. Came back over and went to West Virginia Wesleyan, where Judd Hodges, his captain, was football coach.
West Virginia Wesleyan?
Yes.
That's my hometown.
At Buchanan.
And we'll continue about meeting your husband. He had the cast on your leg.
Yes, and the cast was taken off, and my friends that I worked with on the assembly line says, well, we're going to take you out tonight to go to the show and stop for refreshment in a
mm-hmm.
hotel before we go home, in order to celebrate this.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing after Paul talked to me, after we met, it happened with his friends. I don't know whether he'd gotten a Dear John letter or what. No, he still had the girlfriend. He just didn't go out anywhere, right?
Okay.
Girlfriend over here. What was her name, Paul?
Gloriana.
I thought the name was beautiful. Gloriana. Uh-huh. Anyway, so his friends took him out, whether it went to the show or not, I don't know. But we were in this room, and there's a crowd of Americans there, and he was quite tall, or the others weren't so tall, whatever it was. My friends went to get the refreshments, and I stayed in the corner. There was no seats available. And they were all coming at me, you know, honey this and honey that, whatever. I don't know what they were saying, because I must have looked scared. Because he was there on the side, he like pushes away and gets through. He says, leave her alone, as he's walking over. Got this far from me and says, leave her alone, she's my girl, aren't you? And he told them, she's my girl. And I said, yes. And he walked me home that night. Then we used to date. And 2 years nearly, right? But he had this girlfriend. I used to go shopping with him, pick out gifts for his girlfriend. And he'd say to me, would you like something too? I'd say, oh no, thank you. Yes, I'll take this, I'll take that. So, and then got a Dear John letter or something during that time, and I sympathized with him. But anyway, we fell in love and were planning to get married, and he got shipped out because his captain shipped him out. They've missed all that story, you don't have to tell them.
But you got back together, didn't you?
Yeah, I came over 2 years later. By the way, I met Kennedy, Joseph Kennedy. He was ambassador then.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in. He came and spoke. He came and talked to the people that were going to America. He asked me, are you sure you want to do this? We were there. I said, yeah. When he was questioning me about, you know, who I was marrying and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, yeah.
Okay, now, What do you remember about VE Day, Victory Over Europe?
I don't remember. See, living in a small town, I was back in Mablethorpe at that time. Mm-hmm. They were just quiet country folk, and they didn't go around making big fusses. I think we had quite a few dances locally at the time in order mm-hmm. to enjoy and celebrate like that. And I was quite a dancer in those days. And in those days, it was acceptable to go without a partner, go with mm-hmm. a girlfriend, and young men that were coming home from the army. Mm-hmm. There were some Polish, and my brother came home in one time, and some Polish airmen around, they would come and celebrate. It was quite acceptable to dance with them. Mm-hmm. There was nothing wrong with that. You weren't dating, you weren't doing anything, you were just having a fine time. If you were able to dance, they asked you to dance, you danced. That was mm-hmm. it. You'd go home then. So we were celebrating that way. And we, of course, we'd go to the movies and hear the news and see how they were celebrating in the big towns. Mm-hmm. And everybody was joyous. Pardon me? Coming home in order to celebrate. I made this big banner type thing out of wood, mind you. Hung it on top of our door. Welcome home, desert rat. They were called desert rats.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, he was tall, and our doorways are smaller in England than they are here.
Uh-huh.
First thing did, he hit his head on this board and it came crashing down on his and my mother used to work with me at the time. We worked at a place downtown, or town in the village. And we heard this singing, somebody singing, Quante, quante, tu sei bella. He'd been stationed in Italy, coming back through Africa, came that way,
uh-huh.
stayed there for a while, and singing Italian songs. We could, who's that, you know? We could hear him clear down the street. That's my brother Jordan. So there was, then we celebrated him. But there was no, like you see on movies, but we would see on the, in the movies, not television. We, mind you, we had television right before the war.
Mm-hmm.
In store windows we would see it.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So all your brothers came home? Your
My brother Arthur, he didn't come out till about a year later, but George came home mm-hmm. first.
Mm-hmm. And your father came
in 46 my brother came. But was still in the army. He came. Well, my father had been working around, and yes, we all came back home. Apparently I don't know all that there. Well, I guess my father had kept the house going, even though he had to, that was his main place of getting back to,
mm-hmm.
and must have kept paying whatever the, wasn't a mortgage. In those times, in the urban areas, they built all these new houses, but they were rented to you. But it's like, not like renting here.
Mm-hmm.
We used to rent a house in which people considered they wouldn't replace anything, we were renting. In England, you rented, and it was like your house. Uh-huh. You looked after it.
Oh.
And you would not be put out at all as long as you paid your rent, okay?
Well, when did you leave England then for America?
1947, January 17th, I do believe.
That must have been hard to leave your family. You were so close.
It was. It was hard. But I'd fallen in love, you think?
Uh-huh.
And... yes, because I was like the mainstay of my family, my brothers and my sister. Well, another thing is, I thought I had relations here,
mm-hmm.
an aunt and cousins. They were in New Jersey, and they met me on the boat when I came over. I spent, I think, a week with them. Then I came up, they saw me on the train to come up to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I went to visit them maybe year later, a couple of times, but then I haven't been back for a long time now. But and the relation was my mother's stepsister,
mm-hmm.
same mother, different father, and this uncle who lived in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Never did get to meet him, and he used to be my mother's favorite brother.
Oh, really?
So we'd, you know, talk about mm-hmm. this at home. So I really didn't feel exactly that I was going out all alone. I mm-hmm. felt I had this. And don't forget, we were thinking of going to Australia.
Oh, that's right.
So this was sort of in the blood there a little bit. To, uh-huh. But I fell in love, and I had a commitment,
mm-hmm.
which we talk about nowadays. Uh-huh. But that was really a commitment.
It certainly was.
Yeah.
Today, how do you feel about the reunification of Germany?
Well, I think it's better that we have it now because they're not under the control of Russia and the communists,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't like their political ways at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can become more like democratic ways now, more freedom
mm-hmm.
than they ever had, I'm glad. I mean, I don't see how, it's another thing. Remember I talked way back about how people should stop people when they know things are wrong? When they first built that wall, they shouldn't have never ever let them build that thing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see, right after having a war and fighting for everything like that, that groups of people couldn't have just torn those walls down there and then.
Mm-hmm.
I never could understand that, because they ended up tearing them down, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Well, what about the Nazi war criminals?
They deserve all they get, and the way that the Israelis still chase after them, I condone that.
Oh, do you really?
Yes, what they did was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, throughout history, I learn now that there've been many terrible things, but not so much as the way Hitler did with the.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just Jews either; it was political prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Extermination. I mean, terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I knew all them stories. Not just Anne Frank stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
millions, millions more. And you know, the problem is, young people don't even believe it. They think it's some sort of movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, I think 3 days after the end of the war and the British people were going over there, a captain came in to the hotel where I worked and he had pictures. I don't know how he got these. He must have been a reporter of some sort too. He had smuggled out. Well, he was like bombastic type of a person. But, or maybe he just wanted the people to know. Because I don't know how he got these pictures out.
Mm-hmm.
But pictures that he had taken of the death camps and everything and the people that survived. So I saw some of the first pictures.
Mm-hmm.
that were ever shown, how they looked like skeletons,
mm-hmm.
before it was on the news even. And I know that this captain had just gone over there.
Uh-huh.
There was no way for him to have gotten these pictures any other way, because his family lived in Mablethorpe. He was stationed at the airport, not too far away, and he'd been stationed locally. He hadn't gone over to Germany at all until that given time.
Mm-hmm.
Came and brought these pictures back. I think because he wanted people to see and know that
mm-hmm.
this is true. Plus, before the war began, we knew of all. I told you already,
mm-hmm.
we knew of the scandalous things he did. You just don't go rounding people up like animals. The only other thing that shocked me as much is what he did to the slaves here, and that was British too. But I didn't know about it then.
We're just about done here. Is there anything else that you can think of that we have not talked about that you'd like to add?
I'm trying to think.
What about your nylons?
She asked me about nylons. Did you ever give me nylon?
No, the one that used to run down the street in the air raid, you fell and you... Well, I guess you don't remember.
I told you about the time I got my brother when they were strafing, the airplane was strafing Brian, the young brother. And I ran down the street then to rescue them. I don't remember anything about the nylons. Did I fall? And I maybe
some other girl.
Maybe I had nylons. No, I didn't know you then. It was way before your time. Not before your time, but before I met you, that was so young then. I just got through telling her you never gave me any nylons. Maybe your mother did send some.
No.
You didn't have any other girlfriend, ever. Huh?
Couldn't get them.
Couldn't get them, no, she. Not that I can recall right now. I can't do so much talking.
Well, okay, we're... you've given me a lot of information here, and I thank you very much for it. And this concludes my interview with Hilda Barbuto on the home front during World War II.
You asked me earlier about preparation. What the the army did was all around England, they put barricades and mines. And I lived by the seashore then. Mm-hmm. We weren't allowed there. So for all those years, we weren't allowed near the seashore at all because of the mines and the barricades
mm-hmm.
that they put, and barbed wire, I mean, tons of barbed wire uh-huh. all around England, and for me in particular, where we lived in Mablethorpe is what I knew, but all along that coast. Mm-hmm. Because of the threat of invasion, and in which there was an invasion attempt,
mm-hmm.
and bodies were washed up. We got them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to tell you that bit, it just came to my mind.
Okay, thank you.